The Musician's Musician Podcast is brought to you by you. For real. We rely on listener donations to grow the show, so if you'd like to support what we do, you can set up a one-time or recurring donation. Just follow the link in the description. It's super easy, because PayPal. A huge thanks to those of you who have already given. We also want to ask if you could be so kind as to rate and subscribe to the program on whatever platform you use to listen to us. It helps the show reach more ears, and we love your feedback. Okay, on to the show.
So Parker, I remember when I was a teenager and was just like trying to consume as much music as I could and learning about all sorts of things that were contemporary and not so contemporary and like the art musics and like the pop musics and everything. And this was kind of the time in life and I guess in history where you would go to the library and check out CDs.
Yeah, man.
Mm-hmm. I remember that my cousin and I went to the public library, and he was a bass player, like he was playing jazz stuff and whatnot. And he showed me this record called Jazz French Horn by a guy named Tom Varner. And I remember that album because, not because I like knew a ton about jazz, but I did know that French horn was not a traditional quote unquote jazz instrument.
Sure.
And this guy, Tom Varner, was just playing, he was just smoking bebop lines on a French horn. And I thought it was so cool.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't listened to that for quite a while, and I like to think that it's still super cool.
You know, they're actually,
and I really hope so.
Actually, in D.C., where I live, there is a jazz French hornist in town.
Really?
Yeah, named Abe Mamet. Yeah, there's a cat out here doing that. But there's also, that also makes me think, there's a pretty robust scene of jazz steel pan musicians out here as well. One of the professors at one of the universities here is this monster steel pan player and just like plays the out of bebop on the steel pan, and his students are wild. Like, it's pretty
jeez. I would love to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing I would have ever thought of, but it's wild. Like, there's like a small scene here of it's like, yeah, it's cool. It's pretty cool to hear that done in a different medium than we're used to, you know.
That is way cool. And that's very much along the same lines of who we're talking about today, talking about Buddy Emmons, who is a legend, and arguably one of the best pedal steel guitar players to ever pick the strings. And I love pedal steel. I recorded this guy down when I lived in Austin a couple of times, and just watching him play was such a treat. And just like his touch and everything about his playing just like was so awesome. It's just like one of those things that like, when someone does it really, really well, you can't beat it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of like we were talking before. It's kind of like a really awesome organ player.
Yeah. Like, watching somebody actually know what they're doing on a pedal steel is very much like watching, like, not like watching a piano player fumble around an organ, like watching a trained organist really handle an organ. It's a lot like that, where all four limbs are occupied constantly, you know. It's really a tremendous thing to watch. And that's the reason we wanted to do Buddy Emmons in particular, is because by pretty much all accounts, like you were just saying, he is one of the best of all time. And a lot of what we think of as pedal steel, and as we get more into talking about this, if you're unsure what we're talking about when we say pedal steel, we will explain.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, we'll get there. But when you hear pedal steel, the reason it sounds like it does is because of him. by many accounts, like that's not a hot take. That many, I found very few sources, even just researching pedal steel, that did not mention that fact. Like, it wasn't even trying to dig into this guy in particular. So
yeah, if you talk to a pedal steel player, they will tell you that, like, the one person you need to know is Buddy Emmons.
Yep.
And there is, man, he is the real deal, and we're really stoked to talk about him. He is just one of those players that you listen to him and you're like, that's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know? So
that's what we're going to be doing. Obviously, we're going to talk a little bit about him, but we're going to get into talking about what is pedal steel, where is it present, and why is what Buddy Emmons did with pedal steel important? Why was it so impactful? So buckle up, buckaroo.
So Buddy Emmons was born in Mishawaka, Indiana. I hope I said that right. I do not know the Midwest as well as, I don't know, your average American.
Let's
probably
say you nailed it.
Ought to.
Great.
Cool. Perfect.
A minus.
So Buddy Emmons grew up, his dad was a machinist who we'll get into that being a little more important in a second, but he did not grow up in necessarily like a music, like a professional music family, like some of the people that we've talked about, like definitely a working class family. In Indiana, he was 11 years old when his dad got him a lap steel guitar, which we will talk about later. That is not a pedal steel guitar.
Yep.
But it is very important to getting the lap steel, to getting the pedal steel. And then he started studying at the Hawaiian Conservatory of Music in South Bend, Indiana. And that sounds really weird. However,
it's kind of like how accordion was like a really big thing for a while in terms of people learning accordion, and how today that might seem a little weird, but there was a solid number of decades in the 20th century where a lot of people learned how to play accordion, and it's very, very similar to what you're saying right now as well.
Yeah, there, like, it was kind of early 20th century when Hawaiian music was actually some of the most popular music in the United States.
Yeah.
And what a time. It's
remember,
it's unfortunate,
it like
that it is not as popular as it once was.
Yeah.
But anyway, he started playing like Hawaiian music, but then started learning how to play country music stuff on the radio. And he is playing this lap steel guitar, and his parents eventually get him a steel, like a three-necked steel guitar. So we'll talk about the guitars a little bit later because there's a lot of cool nerdy things about them. But his dad started making these slides for him also, which is kind of a fun thing. And I think this is a good enough time as any. If you are like looking at a steel player or a pedal steel, any of these steel guitars, you have a picking hand and then a hand that has the slide, which is usually some piece of very smooth metal. So that's that comes a lot into the sound. But that's what his dad was making for him. And when he was like 16, he like leaves home. And he goes and starts playing. I mean, he had been playing in just local bands up to this point and like was very good and was wanting to make a career out of this. So he moves to another city. He like experiments with the instruments, which is also an important thing, and gets more and more familiar with the different aspects of the instruments and the different types of instruments that all fall under the steel guitar umbrella. So not long after, he gets hired to play in some bigger and bigger bands, and eventually he moves to Nashville. And I think it's safe to say he was one of the first call, if not the first call, pedal steel player in Nashville.
Yeah.
However, he's touring all over the country, perhaps the world. I couldn't speak to that, but he has done tons and tons of work with various artists that you will have heard of. People like Willie Nelson, George Strait, Ricky Skaggs. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. So if you're, oh, also he played on, Prairie Home Companion for a very long, actually until he died.
Mm.
So he, was very much in the scene and, you know, the various parts of that, but he was one of the pioneers of the instrument. One of the reasons I said it was important that he was looking at these different instruments is because Buddy Emmons was one of the people that actually made significant, like, physical changes to the instrument that have made it how it is today. So he's not only revolutionized the instrument with his playing, but also with the actual instrument itself. So when you see a pedal steel player, that's, I don't know that people are not playing instruments that have that aren't affected. I think I had a double negative in there. I don't think people are not playing instruments. Anyway, I don't know. Everyone's affected by it if they're playing a pedal steel at this point.
Yes.
So, so he, I mean, was just an incredible player, played on tons and tons and tons of records. But he unfortunately passed away in 2015 in Nashville, Tennessee. He died of a heart attack. I probably didn't say this before, but he was born in 1937, so he was 78 years old at his passing. And he had been, long before this, had been, I guess, accepted, nominated, brought into various halls of fame, and had been really paid a lot of tribute to. I mean, he was kind of considered a living legend at that point.
Yeah. I want to highlight very briefly the background in terms of how he actually learned how to do this stuff. Max, you mentioned how he went to this Hawaiian Conservatory of Music and, you know, was digging into that music. And I think what oftentimes happens with folks like him is, you know, again, this is a theme that comes up oftentimes, but I think it's easy to look at the background of somebody like him and glance at it and be like, oh, so he was like self-taught. And it's like, there was a foundation in there. Like,
no.
Like he learned, I obviously cannot speak to the quality of the education at that music school. I have no idea. But, you know, he picked up some fundamentals for sure. And then it's important to note that with those fundamentals, he started picking out and listening to how to do things with country music, or rather playing country music on what he was doing. Anyway, so do be keeping that in mind. It's not, you know, anytime you're hearing somebody saying like, oh, they're totally just this weird miracle August Rush, the music's just in the air for them. Like, that is not real. that's just crap.
Yeah. I actually had a quote I wanted to share regarding that.
Yeah.
And kind of his, like, because when we're looking at the styles of music he's playing, like, country swing, he's playing, like, bebop, influence jazz. There's a lot of improvisation. Yeah. And particularly in Nashville at that time, you had to memorize everything. Now we have, like, all sorts of notation systems and things to like write out chord charts and make that very easy, but that wasn't a thing back then. So improv was everything.
Yeah.
Really. You had to like listen and jam it out and just remember the whole song and all the licks you're going to play and whatever. Or just remember the bones of the song and be able to make things up and make it breathe that way. But Buddy said, my idea of improvisation is this little collection of cliches that I've put in the back of my memory from all of my years of listening, because that's the way I learned to play this instrument. by buying all the records from Nashville, Tennessee, and trying to learn all the solos that were on various Hank Williams records and whatever records steel guitar were on. That was my learning process, and those records were all based on improvisation.
Mm.
So, like, he's like studying these players that were doing it before him, and he's incorporating all of these things, these different styles of music, and then bringing them to the table. But in this mode of improvisation, he hears something, he digests it, and he is able to bring it up again, and in a different or even similar context.
And if that's not a great snapshot into what being an improvising musician is, I don't know what is. I mean, that's nail on the head. And to be keeping in mind with all of that too, these are kind of the scenes he was interacting with. He was in the Nashville scene. He was in the Detroit scene. And, you know, obviously fairly quickly got into working on more national and even international circuits on that kind of a scale. It was a different world for how you broke into being a, you know, a working musician, however much of a front person or side person you were going to be. So, Max, I mean, what you were just mentioning with improvisation, I feel like was a great bridge also into talking about philosophies. Did you have any other thoughts to that end that you want to touch on?
I just think that, like, one of his things that he's really bringing to the table is, or I guess we could call this a philosophy, is that he's trying to, like, not stay stagnant. Is kind of like a higher level concept, and that coming down into wanting to improve the instruments he's playing. Right. Yeah. So he's not like, oh, I've just got these limitations. Oh, that's too bad. He's like, oh, I'm going to like develop this and progress and move this forward. But then also with his music, he's really bringing these influences in and fusing things in ways that people had. I don't know that we can say that they've done before. Mm. I could not say, but I don't know. He's really blurring the lines of a lot of genres here. Mm. And I think it's a really cool way that he does that. And you know, maybe things were a little more blurred back then because you have like Western swing and then, you know, which is taking its roots from various places. But there's just straight up jazz that he's playing, and those Western swing players are probably not schooled in that per se.
One thing that is pretty universal in most accounts that you will find of him and people who knew him and had interactions with him was just the joy that he had of the instrument itself. And I think that that's really powerful for people to connect with. And obviously it can be heard in his music. I mean, he's one of those guys where you're going to find a bunch of old internet forums, meaning like from 20 years ago, where, you know, there's these dudes who are pedal steel junkies talking about like just what a ray of sunshine Buddy Emmons was of a steel player. So, you know, maybe a little bit of a lighter, not such a deep point, but you do definitely hear it in his music. And, you know, you can probably think of other artists who are just, you know, very, very joyous about what they're doing.
A fun fact, the Steel Guitar Forum is actually alive and well.
Hey.
Still is a very active forum, to my understanding, which many have waned a lot, but apparently there's a lot of more seasoned people on there and younger people, and people are optimistic for the future of the instrument. So check that out if you're if you're interested in steel guitar.
This is a hole that you must dig yourself into. There are places to go. Well, on that note, let's get into talking about what the hell this thing even is.
So I have been biting my tongue this whole time, just chomping at the bit, trying to talk about the instrumentation, mostly about this instrument because I'm such a gear nerd.
Yeah.
And I like it.
Well, and boy, is it a rabbit hole. Like, there's a...
Oh, gosh.
There's, like, a very clear and traceable lineage in this whole thing, and it's... It really is a fascinating topic.
Yeah, I think it's cool. Yeah. So when we talk about pedal steel guitar, just gonna set this scene to, like, here's where we're at now. You've got an instrument that is, it's kind of, it itself has like four legs. It looks like a little table with strings on it. And you're gonna have an electric guitar sort of pickup on one end, and you're gonna have a bunch of like tuning knobs on the other end, and a whole bunch of strings, like 6 to 12 strings that you're gonna have on this. Then you're gonna have these rods going down with these pedals that you can work on with your feet, and then also hanging down below this kind of table instrument thing, you've got these like leg levers that you move with like your thigh or your knee. And so when Parker is saying, you know, it's like an organ player, it really is.
Yeah.
Like, this is like Mary Halverson playing guitar with both hands and using two different effects pedals with her other feet, with her feet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a sight, but they make it so smooth.
Oh, and man. Yeah.
Gosh.
Well, it's deceptively hard. I don't know if you've tried playing one of these, but it's not like, for me, it wasn't like a super intuitive thing to just pick up. I mean, I'd imagine, you know, obviously you get used to it, I guess, but I did not connect with it immediately.
Now, I am way more hopeful than reality should, than I should accept in reality. Yeah. I have never played one. Oh. Anyway, so that's where we're at now. Kind of like the Reader's Digest light version of the history of this instrument is you had guitar coming from Spain particularly, and you had a ton of people going to Hawaii. And we're not talking about like, so we had like guitar kind of as we know it today a little more or less, but these are like nylon string guitars and like gut string guitars. And then when the steel stringed guitar comes to Hawaii, this is like turn of the century, right?
Sounds right.
19th, 20th century, somewhere around there. Because Hawaii gets annexed by the U.S. And you get these steel guitars that are there. So like acoustic guitar with steel strings, more or less. And legend has it that this guy had one and was walking down like a railroad, like next to a railroad, picks up a railroad spike, accidentally drops it, likes how it sounds when it hits the strings. And so he gets it and starts playing, like sliding it on the strings and picking it. And tried a knife. It was too, like, because the railroad tie was too thick and the knife was too thin. He found like, he got like a metal comb or something. Anyway, you get then, because there weren't necessarily like teachers there, people thought this was cool. So like pervades and people start really digging into this, and we get steel guitar, and we then get lap steel guitar because we're playing it like it's not, you're not holding it with your hands the same way you would a regular guitar. It's literally resting on your lap. From there we get the electric lap steel guitar, and also the dobro. So the dobro is a different instrument. It has like a metal cone in it. It looks very similar to an acoustic guitar, except for it's got these shiny metal kind of, I don't know, car part looking things.
That's it. Yep. You nailed that.
But because at this time, the instrument had made its way back to the like mainland United States, and people were loving it. And it was like the solo instrument of the day. So people were like, hey, we need this to be louder. So that's where we get the dobro and the electric lap steel. But there weren't standard tunings for this. People were putting more strings on it. Funny that this, you know, metal, you put more strings on the guitar and people are like, that's dumb.
Yeah.
But they were like way about it at this point. Anyway, people were like, well, if we're playing this, we need ways to like change the chords, you know, we slide this slide across the strings and like are picking, we need to be able to like change notes a different way too. So that's why you get the pedals. That's why you get the like levers you can use your legs, use with your legs. And that's how we get the pedal steel. That was just very, very crude. But also important to note, there is not really a standard tuning. People are using various what are called open tunings. I mean, there are much more popular than others tunings. But people will have pedal steel and slide guitars, slide guitars in general, that have multiple necks.
Mm.
So you can have different tunings and be able to like, you know, I don't know. It's a similar concept to like multiple courses on an organ, you know, because it's not a timbre thing. It's a tuning thing. You were like, okay, I need to be able to like play these types of chords or be in this key. So you're going to play the other neck, for example. So, but you got a lot more flexibility with the pedals, with the pedal steel. So not as much need for multiple necks, but not that that isn't a thing, but anyway, so all of that to say, this is a very cool, very complex and slightly niche instrument, but has found its way into a variety of genres, jazz somehow, I mean, with Buddy Emmons, but really the big one is Western swing and country music. And that's, I mean, that's, I feel like where it makes its huge imprint in the musical world. I guess its biggest footprint. And the instrumentation it's working with is kind of like your quote unquote rock band, country band sort of setup. And it's a lead instrument. It can play rhythm, but it is mostly playing these licks and single note sorts of things or double stops, not like huge chords like you could on a piano or you might more often do on a piano or a guitar. You're generally playing smaller chords and single note lines. And I mean, like you'll hear this on a Casey Musgraves album. You'll hear this on like Hawaiian stuff. You'll hear all sorts of different slide guitar. You've heard it before, I guarantee. But it itself, that's kind of where we're at.
So it's really important to be noting the pedals here. That is kind of the relevant thing with what makes this different and like why Buddy was so important to this. So Buddy, you know, kind of standardized a sort of tuning approach that he would prominently use himself. But what was great about the use of the pedals is that basically what the pedals are doing is they're moving one of the strings in a direction, right? And it's not more than like a step. And what's great about it is that with the number of pedals that you have, and then also keeping in mind as well the knee levers, which are doing the same thing. And so what Buddy was doing with that, with the particular tuning he was doing, he basically machined in a particular way of the pedals and knee levers working in a way so that basically the instrument could be applied in a much more chromatic way. Because as Max mentioned, you are dealing with an open tuning of sorts typically, which can sort of restrict you into being able to only comfortably play within a couple of different keys. But you know, a very able pedal steel player, especially with this configuration of pedals, you just have a lot of flexibility in what you're able to do. And that's a big part of the sound of it, is you can hear a pitch being hit, and then it's tricky because you might hear a little slight bend up to another pitch, and that could be the metal slide moving up the string, but that could also be somebody pressing on a pedal and pulling that pitch up. And that's such a brilliant little innovation of that instrument, is that you have so many different options with how you can manipulate and move pitch around.
Yeah. They also often use a volume pedal to keep the volume consistent.
Yeah.
Because they have these long sustained notes and you want to keep it even.
Indeed.
But what about rhythm and harmony that we're getting with Buddy Emmons, Parker?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where we've talked a lot about very adjacent sorts of rhythmic and harmonic persuasions. I do think it's good to think about. You can kind of be expecting rhythmically, again, I think everybody has sort of a picture of what country western is or what that means in your head, and wherever your mind goes is probably right to some degree. You know, it makes me think of this Tom Segura bit where he says, like, people are always asking me what different parts of the country are like, and what I always tell them is, what do you think it's like? That's what it's like, you know. So, and the, you know, it's such a deep part of our you know, at least in American culture, you probably have an idea of what that sounds like. So rhythmically, you know, it's going to be kind of a lot of forward motion pushing stuff, but the thing that's really great with pedal steel is it can play the hell out of slow tempos, just because due to the nature of the sustain and the way that things just kind of slide and glide all over the place, there are a few instruments that can really, really make a melody sing at slower tempos. But harmonically, again, I do think it's interesting, again, to think about this aspect of open tunings. So you get these really interesting moves happening chordally. As you were mentioning, Max, you know, it's not like they're playing these huge chords necessarily. And harmonically, we're dealing, if you've listened to previous episodes of ours, we're talking lots of 1-4-5 sort of moves. Nothing.
Yeah, popular style chord progressions.
Very much so. Nothing terribly complicated here. But just to very, very, very briefly mention, Buddy Emmons was very familiar with the bebop tradition and other improvised traditions. And there are many recorded examples of him improvising single line solos that are nothing short of harmonically complex. Like, the dude really did have a super strong grasp on harmony, and you're going to hear that, although the song forms themselves are not going to bounce off into too complex of territory. So, Max, who would you say are some similar figures to Buddy Emmons? This could go any number of directions, but
gosh, I have a hard time with that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I'm just like so just unschooled.
Yeah.
In this whole space, I feel like I know a decent amount of things about the instrument itself more than the players in the scene.
Mm.
One guy that I think is kind of cool, I'll say, is Robert Randolph.
Mm.
And he's like kind of got a gospel vibe to it, but like, I don't know. He's very, very cool. Definitely check him out. There's a guy named Mike Daly, and he's very cool, very good. Like, also playing with like big name, maybe some of the same names, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. But yeah, lots of really cool players out there.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, there was another cat in sort of in his day named Jimmy Day. That was another pretty prominent pedal steel player who, you know, wasn't quite as important in the same way that Buddy Emmons was, but musically offered a lot of, well, and in terms of tuning as well, like had some very, very interesting contributions to the instrument. But one guy I do want to mention just in terms of touching on this sort of crossover nature is a cat named Greg Lease. He does a lot of dobro and lap steel, but he also does a lot of pedal steel. He very famously recently has worked with like Charles Lloyd and, but has worked with lots of people. So there's tons of people in this space. If you're interested in diving into this rabbit hole, it's a very low barrier of entry, and there are so many killer players in here. So
when we're getting into Buddy Emmons, there is, I think, one real way to do this, but a couple of like smaller ways. There's a decent amount of recorded stuff, not a ton, but there is some like video, I'll say, video record. There are some video recordings of him playing, and it's a great time. That's 100% worth your time. It's a YouTube rabbit hole you'll thank yourself for.
Yeah.
That being said, most of his work was either playing live or, I don't know, I don't know if you could say there was really anything else besides playing live and recording. But he had a lot of both of them. We can't really see most of the live stuff, but there are a ton of recordings. So if you are going to go and want to get into Buddy Emmons, I'm honestly not super sure what the best way to do that is. You know, like, there are just so many records that he played on that, like, I'm not sure that he even got credited for.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe he got put in the liner notes, but, like, a lot of these records are a lot older.
Right.
So, I mean, maybe Discogs, like, I don't know if that's even a great resource for this, but maybe AllMusic, Discogs. Wikipedia is not, frankly.
Yeah.
If you go to, like, Spotify, I couldn't speak to Apple Music, but it's probably very similar.
Yeah. What?
There aren't many things there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would, you know, little bit of digging does good. So, also look up, I think this is probably the way to do it. Look up the artist that you know he played with and, like, look for their records and look at the personnel.
Yeah.
Because back in that time, people were a lot more keen to put actual hired personnel on their liner notes and stuff. Anyway, we're going to recommend a couple of albums that you definitely can find. And I'm going to say mine is Steel Guitar Jazz.
Nice.
1963, he, like, plays on this. And I just remember, like, listening to this and being like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But what about you, Parker?
Yeah, there's this one that I discovered called Emmons Guitar Inc. It's also sometimes referred to as the Black Album. It's fantastic, though. You can find all the recordings of it on YouTube. And it is one of those things where you do see it really demonstrates, like, what can be done playing slow tempos with this instrument. It's fantastic.
You can actually get it on CD.
There you go.
And vinyl. So, and
Mystery
cassette.
Unshrouded.
Man, amazing.
See, we like to offer some value on this platform, this little service we offer here.
We do our best.
Anyway, plenty of weeds to dig through here. It is terribly fascinating. It's just, pedal steel is usually just pigeonholed into very specific spaces, but I don't think I've ever seen a halfway decent pedal steel player and not been kind of blown away. It's just a beautiful, awesome instrument. And Buddy Emmons is one of the idols of this instrument, one of the great innovators. And without further ado, this is our defense of Buddy Emmons. Musical instrument lineage and resultant taxonomy is a fascinating topic. Just as the electric guitar didn't spontaneously appear on stages without any precursor, the pedal steel has undergone numerous mechanical iterations. As is often the case, new versions aren't necessarily better, but ultimately, an optimal version, or at least template, came into being. Born out of a pragmatic need for access to certain sounds, Buddy Emmons can be thanked for some of the more popular ways in which pedal steel guitar is made and wielded in our day.
His inventive mind was strongly supported by his legendary musicianship. Buddy's touch, vocabulary, and joy put into his planar console of an instrument has been hugely important for what we now expect to hear from the smooth, bendy characteristics of pedal steel. It is not common that a prominent, mimicked voice was also such a prominent contributor to the construction of the instrument itself. Considering his immutable reputation as a player and genuinely irreplaceable contribution as an inventor, Buddy Emmons can and should be one of the biggest names that slides into mind when you hear that cascading, entrancing table of strings that is the pedal steel. So thanks for listening. We really hope you check out the pedal steel. I mean, like, the time I've spent in Texas and in, like, at large and in Nashville, it's just, like, one of those things that I am just, like, so stoked when I encounter one, and which has happened, obviously, a lot I maybe not obvious, but it happens a lot more frequently in those places than many other parts of the country.
Yes.
We hope you can go out and like see some live country music or someone using a pedal steel. It's probably going to be country.
Yeah.
But maybe not. Who am I to say? Anyway, we hope you love it. We hope you check out Buddy Emmons because he is arguably the greatest of all time. I don't know that anyone would really fight me on that one.
Yeah.
And I invite them to.
Yeah.
So we hope you listen to them and tell us what you think. You can send us an email at themusiciansmusicianpodcast@gmail.com. You can hit us up on social media at TMMPod on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also go to our website, www.tmmpod.com, where you can listen to episodes, read the defense of the artist, check out our picks, and even donate to the growth of the podcast. And just a reminder, please rate and leave a review. We just appreciate that tremendously. It helps us out a ton, and it's, it means a lot. So we hope you love the podcast. We hope you love Buddy Emmons and his playing and the pedal steel. And until next time, thanks.